Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 327. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. You ready for part two?
I'm ready. Wrapped it up. Trade deadline was busy, but not as exciting as I thought from the standpoint that we didn't have any massive moves and minimal like high-end prospects wins. So, but still, there were a lot of moves. Relievers were all over the place, and relievers certainly kind of dictate the market too. So yeah, there's some fun moves, and let's do it. Let's do part two and break them all down.
This was the trade deadline version of the quantity over quality dynasty trade offer. There's a lot of moves, but like none of them are like, yeah, there's some big ish moves. Jack Flaherty, Jazz, Randy going, but it wasn't like that really big blockbuster where you're like, damn, like that just happened. We didn't get any of those, but still plenty of fun moves, some values changing, new opportunities arising, some prospects on the move here. Break them all down. If you missed part one, we did all the moves up through Sunday night when we recorded 8 o'clock or so Eastern time on Sunday. So we're getting all the moves over the last 48 hours of the trade deadline period. And there's still 9, 10, 11, 12 trades here that are fantasy relevant in some way, so we'll break them all down. Before we do, though, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I am at EricCross04. Show is at ToolShitPod. If you enjoy the pod, please rate and review. Make sure you check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and ToolShedFantasy.com for more work from each of us, including all of our dynasty and prospect rankings. And, of course, check out all the great things going on over at RotoBaller. Use the code TOOLSHED at checkout. Get you 10% off any premium package. So much great stuff there. The news desk is firing on all cylinders. So we got plenty of baseball content every day. Football, basketball, hockey, you name it, RotoBaller's got it. So check that out over at rotoballer.com. Again, code TOOLSHED, 10% off at checkout. Chris, let's start with a pretty fun three-team deal here between the Los Angeles Dodgers, St. Louis Cardinals, and the Chicago White Sox. So the Dodgers acquired Tommy Edman, Michael Kopech, and Oliver Gonzalez. St. Louis got Eric Fede, Tommy Pham, and a player to be named later. And the White Sox got Miguel Vargas, Gerald Perez, Alexander Albertus, and a player to minimum later. Both of those player to minimum leaders are from the Dodgers. My first initial thought here was, hey, Miguel Vargas has finally been freed from purgatory with the Dodgers. And granted, he didn't perform well really anytime he got the chance to start for the Dodgers here and there. Still was putting up pretty good numbers in AAA this season, slashing .290, .440, .566 in 191 games, 14 doubles, 8 home runs, 8 steals, and more walks than strikeouts, 38 to 33. Obviously, he goes to a much worse lineup. That's basically like him, Robert, and Vaughn, and then a bunch of people they could probably pull off the street versus that lineup. So worst lineup. But hey, I'll take that if it gives a chance to Vargas to play here. So I'm still in on Vargas. I don't, you know, maybe we went a little too high on him a couple years ago. I think that's fair to say, but still a good bat here. So I'd be looking to buy in dynasty leagues for sure.
White Sox fans have already turned on him. He's trash. I think he was 0-for-8 in his first two games with 3 strikeouts or something like that. And he misplayed a ball in the outfield. And yeah, I feel like everybody, they already hate him. So off to a better start, Miguel Vargas. Yeah, I think that the chance to play every day will be good for him. I think that there's certainly a chance that, yeah, should he play the outfield? Probably not. But yeah, I think that there's still plenty to like here in this profile from a hitter standpoint. I think that it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out because the team context is certainly not great, but we know Vargas has shown some skills, especially in the minor leagues, and underlying data's good. Doesn't chase all that much. He has shown the ability to hit the ball hard, to make contact, and I think it can work. We'll see how it plays out, but I think Vargas can be a useful piece, and he's certainly going to play, I think, better in an OBP or like a points league format. And that's really where I think that the value will be. Not to say he can't hit for average, because he's shown he can hit for average, at least in AAA. Yeah, but can he hit for average in the majors? We shall see. The contact skills have been there in the majors, so I don't see any reason why we won't see him hit for average as long as the batted ball distribution is good. But yeah, give this guy a chance to move across the country. He's played 2 games with you. So it's funny to see people already writing him off on Twitter.
He's like easily one of their top 3 hitters right now. And I don't even think that's a question. So yeah, like this is a good hitter. You know, is he going to be flashy? Is he going to be a stud? No. But could he, hit for a good average, provide a good OBP, maybe get up 18 to 20 home runs? Maybe he has a couple years when he gets in like into the 20s and maybe adds a handful of steals as well, 5, 6, 7 steals, something like that. So yeah, it's not flashy, but that would be a pretty solid profile. I don't know what his eligibility is going to be like. Obviously, he's not the greatest defender. He's been moved around, hasn't really worked out anywhere. So who knows? Let's say he's outfield, maybe your outfield 4 type of guy, or maybe a guy you can throw at corner or middle infield. Probably not a starter at any infield position for fantasy. But yeah, I think it's a good time to buy because the price tag and perceived value is pretty low right now. So definitely a low risk and potential for a solid return on investment there. But a lot of other moving pieces here in this deal. Eric Fede having a nice bounce back season, went over to play in the KBO, came back, and has been pitching pretty solidly for the White Sox this year. Snell Hill step into that St. Louis organization. Tommy Edman going to the Dodgers. They get Michael Kopech as well. You think, Kopech obviously is very polarizing. He's been either lights out or complete opposite of lights out. I don't want to be mean, but there's usually nothing in the middle. But that Dodgers bullpen is in flux right now. Hudson's kind of stepped up lately. Phillips has been faltering. Do you think there's any value still to be had with Kopech, Chris, or are you pretty out at this point?
I wouldn't be shocked to see the Dodgers fix him and make him a pretty serviceable reliever. I do think that he's got the arm talent, the arsenal that I think could certainly work. I'm not out on him in Los Angeles. I want to give him a shot and see what happens. I'm not saying he's going to work out. He's been so hit or miss, but I think that Kopech can be good, and I think it's a good org for him to go to.
That's where I'm at, Chuck. I'm not fully out. I'm not like rushing out to try to get him either, but there's still good arm talent there. He's just maybe the Dodgers are much better org. So maybe they can, you know, help him right the ship here. So I'm at least intrigued, see where it goes, you know, this year and moving forward. Tommy Edman, he's been really hurt all year for the most part. I don't, what about Eric Fede? Are you in on Eric Fede? I think people are generally just not really into him, even though he's pitched pretty well this season. Where are you on him moving forward?
Yeah, he's interesting. I was not in coming into the season. I will say that. So with on my part there, if I told you not to draft Eric Fede, I apologize because he's been good. He's eaten a lot of innings. He's thrown 100 and almost 22 innings to this point. Has a low 3 ZRA at 3.11. And sure, the FIP and the Sierra, all those metrics are a lot higher, but the results are there. You can't argue it. He doesn't strike out a lot of guys, but also doesn't walk a lot of guys. Just inducing the weak contact and making it work. Is the move to St. Louis good for him? Yeah, I don't see why it hurts him at all. It's not like he at least should get some more run support and potentially get some more wins. Kind of shocking that he has 7 wins so far.
I know, right?
With Chicago. But yeah, I think that he's fine. I'm not like going to go out and you must get him kind of thing. But I think there's some value to be had. He's got another year on the contract, so he'll be in St. Louis again next year. I think it's a good landing spot for him. I think that there is some value, but certainly people are much higher on him than I am because I could see it crashing down at any moment.
Yeah, the upside isn't massive. He's never been, even before he went over to the KBL last year, his career high for a K rate is 21.7 in 2021. This year he's at 21.5. He also has the best walk rate of his career this year, which is solid, and the best ERA and best whip, etc. It's cutter, sinker, sweeper, changeup. He commands them all pretty well, especially the cutter. He goes up with that, sweepers and changeup down, and then sinker's all over the place, but gets ground balls, gets weak contact. He's like a top, I don't know, 75 pitcher, something like that. He's not going to be a guy that you're going to be one of your top guys, but if he's like your SP 6-7, whatever, depending on your league depth, I think that's fine. I don't think there's anything fluky. I'm probably a mid-3 ERA guy with around the league average or slightly below league average K rate. That's what Eric Fede is right now. The one really intriguing prospect here, Gerald Perez going to the Chicago White Sox here from the Dodgers. A pretty good season in low A, Rancho Cucamonga. 264, 380, 420 slash line. Walk rate well over 10%, hit 10 home runs in 75 games there. And this is a prospect, Chris, that's starting to get a little bit of hype around his name this year. Doesn't have that one standout tool, but do a little bit of everything across the board. You need a little bit more power projection in the profile. Maybe got his double-digit steals as well. And obviously, who knows where he would have, you know, fit in with the Dodgers, still a couple years away. But with the White Sox, you got to think that would be an easier path for him as well. How high are you on Perez? I've seen him push pretty high in rankings right now. Where are you at on him, and what are your thoughts on him?
I think I had him right around 200 overall and was reviewing and updating my rankings today. I posted an article today highlighting every prospect traded and where I had them ranked. And he's added some good weight coming into this year, which led to some more power. And I know you look at it and say, well, he had 11 home runs last year at the complex. Like, still, it's the complex. So the fact that he's single A, he's added some good power to his profile. He's hitting the ball harder. He can take a walk. He's got 15 doubles, 10 home runs this year, and 350 plate appearances right now. Contact skills are probably a little bit below average. And there's questions about where he fits in the field. My concern with him is that the frame is a short and stocky frame, and he really struggles with fastballs up in the zone. So I'll be curious to see how he handles that, at least good fastballs. So we'll say, you know, I mean, he's not facing very challenging competition in single A, the Cal League, not great pitching wise. And now he's actually assigned to Kannapolis. I will actually see him next week, which will be fun. See some of these guys, new guys with the White Sox, with Kannapolis team, and George Wolkow's there. And maybe even I'm hoping to see Hagen Smith. I don't know if he pitches this year, but you know, I'll see Winston-Salem again this year. I'll see Kannapolis next week. So maybe, just maybe, they let Hagen Smith pitch and I will see him. But aside the point, I think Perez is a fine prospect. He gets the ball in the air often, and he can get to the pool sides. I think that at the end of the day, it's an interesting profile. I'm curious how it ages and how he progresses moving up. But I do think there's a little bit of intrigue here.
Yeah, I think there is too. I feel like the perceived value has gone a bit high on him. Like, I don't see him really standing out in any one area, so I'm not like rushing out or thinking about putting him in my top 100 or anything like that. But like I said, yeah, I think top 175, 200 range is pretty fair right now, and we'll see how he does in the White Sox org here. But you know, some fun moving pieces here for sure. Next move here, Cleveland getting Lane Thomas from the Washington Nationals in exchange for Alex Clemmy, Rafael Ramirez, and Jose Tena. Let's start with the prospects here going to the Nationals, Chris. And I think the real intriguing one here, Jose Tena is a solid prospect in his own right, but the real intriguing one here is Alex Clemmy, 2023 second rounder out of Fall River, Massachusetts, so only a couple hours from me. Just turned 19 about 2 weeks ago. He's a 6'6 6'6 lefty, striking on a lot of batters this year. K rate is at about 32.5% right now, but also walking a lot of batters as well, currently with a 15.8% walk rate. But where do you fall with him? There's a lot of intrigue here, and now he's on a new team. So where are you at now on Mr. Alex Clemmy?
I think it's a case where, yeah, I've really struggled with his eval. I did miss seeing him last week. I was hoping that I would catch his start. I caught a couple of Lynchburg games, but did not get Clemmy. He's interesting. You look at the numbers on the surface, and it's okay. Like, they're not great, but you know, the fastball is weird. It's mid-90s, which is good for his age. It's a kind of funky delivery. It's the IVB on it's not good. Doesn't have really good shape at all. I think it's probably below average outside the velo. But he does miss bats with the slider. I think that's really been the big pitch for him, is that he misses bats with the slider, gets whiffs, gets chase, and then also the changeup's pretty solid. He's firmer, upper 80s. I don't know. I think that the slider and changeup probably carry him a little bit. He's going to have to throw more strikes, and I think that's the question. Look, and Washington certainly has a type with pitchers. They acquired Tyler Stewart. They love tall pitchers, very big guys, and they love lefties with questionable command but good stuff. So you look at like Mackenzie Gore or a DJ Hurst who they acquired, and Clemmy fits the mold where, I don't know, maybe it works out, maybe it doesn't, but you take that upside shot, and I think that that's a really solid first piece. Tena could slot in the lineup right now. And I know a lot of people like Rafael Ramirez. I saw him last week as well. And you know, there's some questions about the contact in the profile. He is young. He just turned 19. So you know, you look and the contact skills have been a massive question at both the complex and in single A this year. He struck me as a player that was going to play the game really hard. I think he can get to some pop. It's an interesting frame where he has a little bit more room to fill out. But you know, I think that the Nationals did really well here. I know Thomas has a couple more years of control, but like, where does Thomas fit on this team moving forward? I don't really know, to be honest with you. It makes sense for them to make this move, and I thought they did pretty well getting some guys that have some upside.
Yeah, like Lane Thomas, he's a good player, and we'll get to him here in a second. But is he still on this team when they get back to, obviously, if they hadn't traded him? I don't think their window is soon. They got some good young pieces, yes, but still got a long ways to go before they're back in really being a postseason contender. Yeah, I thought it was a decent move on their part, get some younger talent here. Tena is a guy that you look at his numbers, and they're pretty solid. I think that kind of inflates his stock a little bit. He's got 17 home runs and 14 steals this year in AAA in 91 games, hitting .294. I don't know if I ever see him, though, as like a full-time regular. I feel similarly to him as I do like Nick York. Maybe he could start a little bit, but I don't know. I think he's more like a backup infield type of player that can play multiple positions. He's played second, third, short. He's done all three of those this year as well, mostly at short, but also got like 15, 16 games at second and third as well. So I think he's a guy that maybe fits a super utility role, starts here and there a few times a week, but it's probably more of a deep league target. But Lane Thomas, to me, is intriguing because after he had the 28-20 season last year, he saw his ADP rise, dynasty rank rise. This year, it's been pretty underwhelming. Yeah, he's got 28 steals, which is great, but only 8 home runs and a 253, 330, 405 slash line. But you look under the hood, Chris, and he's pretty much either right in line with last year or better. The barrel rate's gone down 2.3%. But average EV is up almost a mile per hour. Her hit rate's up, 1%. But again, those are pretty. So overall quality of contact is pretty even the last year. He's improved the walk and strikeout rates like 3-4% each. And zone contact is still pretty good, 86%. Overall contact's right at 80%. So you look at the profile, it's pretty solid across the board. So you're coming in like, where's that power gone? The ground ball rate's even gone down this year. It's not like he's hitting a ton of ground balls either. Pull rate, 38%. That's gone down almost 10%. So that's like the one big thing, but that's still a good profile. And he's running a ton. He's good runner. So I'd be looking to buy Lane Thomas here. I think he's in store for a better final 2 months of the season. And I think the value has dropped to a point where he's a really good buy. What are your thoughts there?
I think so. I think that he has the tools that you want to see to bet on. Now he's in a much better lineup that's going to be a contender. He hasn't hit a home run in quite some time. I was looking back to when was his last home run on the game log. It looks like it was back June 20th. So it's been a little while since he hit a home run. He still has the speed. And I think that there's some potential here for him to continue to take a step forward. I mean, closer to what he was last year. And obviously not that kind of upside. I don't think that we'll see him go 28-20 again, but still pretty interesting player that I think is worth betting on.
Yeah, I don't think we'll see the 28 home runs again, but could he be a guy that gets at least near 20? Yeah, I think he can. And obviously, like you mentioned, better lineup as well. So yeah, there's a lot of good things under the hood here. And given how far the value's dropped, I think he's a pretty damn good buy right now for sure. Next move here was pretty interesting one, the Houston-Toronto deal. Houston getting a rental in Yusei Kikuchi, who was pretty good earlier in the year, not as good lately. And they gave up right-hander Jake Bloss, Joey Loperfido, and Will Wagner, son of former All-Star reliever Billy Wagner. So that's a pretty big return going to Toronto. I think Toronto did very well here. So starting with Jake Bloss here, 6.94 ERA and three starts. That's just three starts. You give up a lot of hard contact, but he's got a deep arsenal, six pitches, four-seamer, slider, curve, sweeper, changeup, and the occasional sinker as well. But he can miss bats. He's five of those have a whiff rate above 25%, and it's small sample size, but he pitches in five different velocity bands as well. Fastball is 93, slider's in the upper 80s, changeup's more in the mid-80s, and he's got the sweeper in the low 80s and curveball in the upper 70s. So he's all over the place in terms of velocity. So I'm not saying he's a stud by any means, but there's definitely some intrigue here with Jake Bloss, 23 years old, third round pick last year, 99th overall by Houston. So definitely some intrigue here, Chris. What do you think on Jake Bloss?
Bloss is interesting. He hasn't really missed bats at any level. So I don't know. I'm questioning how much strikeouts he can get at the major league level. I do think the stuff's there. I think we could look back a year from now and say, oh man, like Bloss straight up was better than Kikuchi, and they didn't even need to get the other pieces. It wouldn't shock me a bit. So I do like Bloss. I think that he's one that's really transformed his game this year. I did get to see him in high A when he was with Asheville before he moved on rather quickly to double A and then the majors. And obviously it was surprising that he jumped to the majors as quick as he did, but I wouldn't really care at all about the starts that he's made in the majors so far. It's a guy that was rushed. He made his debut less than a year before being drafted, or since being drafted last summer, third rounder of Georgetown. But it's a hit. Like his fastball plays up because it's got so much extension on it, which I think is notable. The characteristics are good on it. I think that it comes down to location on it for him. I think that the slider is a solid offering. The curve provides some nice depth to play off that pitch. Heavy drop, a lot of horizontal movement on all of his pitches. So I like to see that profile. I think that it can play. I think he can be a serviceable SP4 type long-term, and obviously he's pitched in the majors. He's ready to go at this point. So, I like Bloss, and I may like Bloss more than Kikuchi currently.
Yeah, Kikuchi had that nice little stretch earlier in the year, but he's really fallen off lately. So I'm not really intrigued by Kikuchi. She's like a streamer and a good matchup at this point. But you know, I think obviously the biggest name going back for most people will be Joey Loperfido, 25 years old. Got a couple different stints with Houston this year, 38 games total. Numbers don't knock your socks off by any means. 236, 299, 358, two home runs, two steals, but seven walks to 43 strikeouts. And that was what people were questioning when even before he came up the first time, is that the K rate had been higher here and there in his minor league career, but there was a fun power speed blending at 25 home runs, 27 steals last year with a pretty solid. He's always walked at a good clip. He hasn't really provided much in terms of quality of contact in the major leagues, and he's just striking out way too often right now. But hey, fresh start here. He probably gets a chance to play regularly or close to it with the Toronto Blue Jays here. Definitely more than he played in Houston for sure. And one thing here, it's really intriguing. He's got a really good sweet spot percentage, 46.2%. Hard hit rate's right around league average, but that 36.4% strikeout rate and only a 64.5% contact rate. Again, small sample size, but there's definitely some concerns here as to where the average ends up long term. But you know, I still think he could be a solid power speed blend. We'll see, but maybe with a lower average. Maybe he's like a Jose Siri type. I don't know, something like that. But where are you at on Loperfido these days? Pretty interesting profile for sure.
Yeah, he's solid. I think that he had gotten so much buzz like early in the year because how hot he was. But we're still looking at like elite barrel rates. You mentioned the sweet spot rate. Like, he hits the angles extremely well. And he's in the minor leagues, at least, producing pretty elite barrel rates. And I think the contact rates are passable. I don't think it's anywhere near Jose Siri. We think about the kind of batting average he could produce because
that's a bit harsh.
And just looking at the major league sample, understandable. The contact rates are really bad. But throughout his minor league career, we're looking at like closer to average contact rates. So I think that he'll come around. And I think that now's a chance to play consistently. He never really got that opportunity to play super consistently in Houston, but I think that now he has that opportunity and there's going to be some struggles, but you know, I think that Loperfido provides plenty with the bat and he's going to have to. The glove is whatever, but you know, I do think the bat can be pretty good and I wouldn't judge him on his 123 plate appearances in the majors this far. Don't go look at the Savant page and be like, oh man, like he sucks kind of thing. But
right. He
does have intriguing tools. He has good power. Contact's respectable. Even his ex-wo ball and contact in the majors this year has been good, suggesting that maybe he's had some bad luck. So yeah, I still like the bat. I think that there's questions to be answered still, but I do think that there is pretty solid potential here for fantasy. And it's a profile that I want to invest in, see where it goes.
Yeah, no, for sure. And again, like Siri was definitely a little bit harsh. I was more so saying it along the lines of maybe good power speed blend, but the average isn't quite the greatest.
Yeah.
But he's definitely a better contact hitter than Siri. So, yeah, I've always been a Loperfido guy. I like the profile a decent bit here. And yeah, definitely love to see him just in the regular role, just get more than sporadic playing time, which he was in Houston. So, definitely excited for that. Absolutely. A couple other deals here we can hit on quickly. Atlanta getting Jorge Soler again. Worked out pretty well for them last time. And also Luke Jackson in exchange for Sabin Ceballos and Tyler Matzek going back to the San Francisco Giants. And then also Milwaukee getting Frankie Montas in exchange for Joey Weimer. Joey, fame of a couple years ago out at FPAS and in the Arizona Fall League. And also getting Jacob Junis back as well. So obviously focusing more on Soler and Montas here. Soler's been okay this year. He's got 12 home runs, but only hitting 238, 329, 416, but had 36 home runs and hit 250 last year. So obviously a pretty damn good year there. Montas hasn't really been the same since he had those couple of decent years in Oakland, and obviously had some injuries as well that really limited him. I guess there's a little bit of intrigue here. I'm not a Montas guy in general. He's got a 5.01 ERA this year and isn't missing bats whatsoever, but at least he's out of Cincinnati. That could help a little bit, but I'm still not really looking. Now, outside of a streamer in a good matchup, or if he has like a two-start week, something like that, I might look at him, but pretty out on Montas. But what are your thoughts on him and Soler coming back to your Braves?
Yeah, so Laird's interesting. I think that it's been much needed for the lineup, and I thought they would probably make some more moves, but at the end of the day, I think that they didn't see the need to pony up, and the cost was on things was pretty expensive, obviously. And the Braves have, they don't have much depth in the minors. They have talent. There's plenty of talent, as we've seen. I know everybody ranks the Braves farm system really bad year over year, but then you have Spencer Schwellenbach, who comes up and has looked extremely good. But aside the point, so Laird's really picked it up. You look since June 1st, and it's a 280 average, near 380 OBP, and a 486 slug. He's got juice, obviously. Power's going to play better in Atlanta, in my opinion. In San Francisco, they get him for two more years after this, if I'm not mistaken. Contract runs through 2026, like effectively replacing a Marcell Ozuna as his contract comes off the books after this year. But I think that makes sense. Luke Jackson, whatever, reliever. But yeah, I think that Soler is a good fit for Atlanta. I think that he will be one that provides some pretty good value for fantasy. And given that he's been really good the last 2 months, I think I'd probably invest in him. I don't think the kind of perceived value is caught up. Frankie Montas, I just really don't have any interest at this point. I don't know. It's obviously he was in a bad park. You know, his style of pitching did not fit in Great American Ballpark at all. So it was interesting to see that, you know, Cincinnati is the team that signed him. And look, and the funny thing is his away stats were way worse. He had a 4.5 ERA at home and a 5.47 ERA on the road, the slug higher on the road. He allowed 4 home runs at home versus 10 on the road. So everything that you think about, oh man, like he was going to be terrible in Great American Ballpark didn't come to fruition, which is funny. He's been terrible in July after a decent June. I just don't have confidence in any part of this deal at this point. I have no confidence in Montas, Junis, and not sure I have any confidence in Joey Weimer. It would be fun to see Joey, you work out and become something, but we shall see. I just think it's a moot deal on all sides.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of 5-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, that would be fun to see Joey come turn into something, but at this point, I don't know. He's still got some good skills, but has some pretty big warts in the profile as well. And yeah, I'm pretty out on Montas. But next deal here was a pretty fun one. Interesting one, though. Baltimore getting Trevor Rogers, who hasn't really been that good for a bit, but giving up Kyle Stowers and Connor Norby. So let's start with Norby, Chris, because I think perceived value on Norby is still fairly high. You look at, he's been a pretty consistent performer in terms of just the surface stats in the minor leagues. 2022 hit 279, 360, 526, 29 bombs, 16 steals in 122 games. Last year in AAA, and he got the AAA late in 2022 for 9 games. 2023, whole year in AAA, 290, 359, 483, 40 doubles, 21 home runs, 10 steals. And this year, 16 home runs, 13 steals in 80 games with a 297, 389, 519 slash line. But from what I've seen, Chris, you don't seem to be overly high on Norby. Maybe I'm wrong, so correct me if I am wrong, but what are your thoughts on Norby? And if I was correct and you're not high on him, why is that?
Yeah, I've definitely been the low man from the start, even when he was at the peak in, 2022. I think he hit, 29 homers and stole a good bit of bases and hit for average. And nothing in the underlying has supported anything that he's done, which is weird. And maybe he's just a hitter that consistently outperforms the expected stats, but I don't think Norby's anything more than like a below average regular. Honestly, the hit tool is below average. He's not great in the field. He doesn't have any speed. Like, he's not going to steal bases at the major league level. You can run on AAA catchers, but he's not going to steal bags in the majors. And you know, the power's fringy at best. I think that it's like 40 to 50 grade tools across the board. And I just don't really see how it works for fantasy purposes. He's seen the strikeout rate kind of explode up this year. And the contact I mentioned is not good, but yet he's still maintained a AAA slash of 297, 389, 519. Which kind of shows you, I just don't think the AAA competition is very good. I'm not sure what Norby provides for fantasy. I think it's going to be like a 260 average with 15 home runs and not many steals. And yeah, I don't know. I just, look at the profile and I don't really see it. I think that, yeah, the performance has been steadily good, but it's why I think that we can't judge prospects just based on performance, because there's so much more and there's such a bigger picture to look at here with Norby. Yeah, I will say on the positive side, there have been some good things. Seen the exit velocities take a little step forward this year, which is encouraging. The average is up about 1 mile an hour, but again, the ninth percentile, you know, being still a little bit below average. I look and he's hitting some healthy fly balls, which is encouraging. He's pulling the ball a decent bit. So he does things that you want to see, and I think that does help him get to some of the home run power. I'm just not sure that it's going to be one of those fantasy contributors that you want, and everybody's, oh my gosh, like the Orioles just got absolutely robbed here. And I don't think that's the case at all. Like I don't think Stowers is a major league regular, and maybe Norby's going to be a regular in Miami, but I'm not sure it's a super good one, in my opinion.
Headline tomorrow on Twitter, Chris hates Connor Norby.
Yeah, yep.
That's probably what it'll be. No, I'm kidding. But Norby's interesting. I feel like you just described like Michael Massey or someone like that. Someone that can be like 15 home runs, 5, 6, 7 steals, okay average. I think he could have value in deeper formats. Do I think he's ever top 10 second baseman? No. Probably not even a guy you start at like middle infield, or he'll never be like a top 50 outfielder if that's where he ends up. I do like the more, you know, better path to playing time here, though he was getting some run in Baltimore before the trade, but obviously long term, he's like, where does Norby fit in? You know, once Holiday's up for good, once Mayo is up for good, Kierstad, etc. He was like the one that we all thought would get traded. So I'm not surprised to see him traded. But for Trevor Rogers, though, I'm just not a big Trevor Rogers guy. I think there could be some low end value in Norby. I think I have him as a back end top 100 guy. I think a lot of other people have him higher than me, but except for you, Chris. But Trevor Rogers, obviously, he was at that really good 2021 season and a little bit in 2020 as well. You know, he had that 20.1% K minus walk rate and a 2.64 ERA that year. But since then, he's struggled with, he's had some off the field things, durability issues, and just has not pitched well. And I believe velocity is pretty down. Like, what was it in 2021? Yeah, he was 94.5 in 2021. This year he's 92 on the dots. That's a 2.5 mile an hour drop. And even in the last 2 years, he was 94.6 in 2022. So the last 2 years dropped 1.4 and then 1.2 miles an hour. He's not missing bats. He does not have any offerings that really miss bats, and all of his offerings are getting hit around. Like, he has no offering with a batting average against of below 250. So I don't know. He's walking a lot of guys too, around 10% in there. I don't know. Maybe Baltimore can find something. You know, they probably see something in him they think they can tweak, whether it's pitch mix or arm slot or, you know, release height, something that maybe they can fix to unlock something here. So I'm not like 100% saying he'll never be good again, but I'm still pretty out here. But I don't know. Do you have any faith that we see a turnaround from Trevor Rogers in Baltimore?
Probably not. Yeah. It's another one of those deals where it's okay. Yeah, sure. It's good that they, you know, take their shot, and I respect them for doing so. But yeah, Rogers just hasn't looked like the same pitcher that he was, you know, back in 2021. And now we're looking at, that's been 3 years ago at this point, and it's been slowly downhill from there. And he's still young. He's 26 years old, which is the positive, but I'm not seeing it, honestly. The good thing is that he's eating innings. He's consistently pitched this year, so you at least have to say, okay, like, he's got that going for him. But at the end of the day, is he going to be starting for Baltimore in the postseason? I don't think so. I can't see that happening, but yeah, I guess you never know what could happen. But right now, I don't see Rogers as like a huge investment or anything.
No, yeah, I just, maybe if you're in a deeper league and just want to take a flyer on him because it'll cost you pretty much nothing, or maybe he's even sitting on the waiver wire and you want to just see where this goes. All right, I can get behind that. But yeah, my confidence level isn't overly high. Let's just say that. But all right, moving on here. Next intriguing deal here. Probably one of the biggest one yesterday, or yeah, on Tuesday, on the last day of the deadline. San Diego getting Tanner Scott from the Miami Marlins, and another big addition to their bullpen after getting Jason Adam as well. Also got Brian Hoeing, and sent a prospect haul back to Miami of Robbie Snelling, Adam Mazur, Graham Pauly, and Jay Beshears. Scott, in start of the year, a little bit walk happy. People were questioning, is he legit? Was last year a fluke? Blah, blah, blah. And then he reeled off, I think, his 17 straight outings without an earned run. He's been back to the dominant Tanner Scott. Though I don't see him stepping in and being the guy. Robert Suarez has been pretty freaking good for San Diego all year. Maybe it's somewhat of a timeshare, but even if it is, I think Suarez is still the lead guy there. I think Scott's value is taken, at least for this year, is taken a little bit of a hit. Unless you're in saves hold leagues, so obviously he's still going to be an absolute stud. But big prospect haul going back here. And really, to use a fantasy term, bought low on at least three of these guys here. Snelling had been having a pretty rough year in AA after his big year last year. Mazur got lit up in his time with San Diego in the majors. And Pauly's kind of taken a little bit of a step back in terms of his production this year. So I'm going to bought low on a few of these guys here, Chris. What are your thoughts on Scott and this prospect call? You still have faith in Snelling, Mazur, Pauly? Pretty intriguing names here for sure.
Yeah, Scott obviously was the biggest reliever moved on the trade deadline stuff. You mentioned how good it was. And I was even questioning the beginning of the year. Was he kind of toast? And yeah, he's turned it around and been stellar. It's been pretty remarkable to watch Tanner Scott has developed over the last couple of years. I just remember him in the early days in Miami in 2022 and just really struggling against the Braves. I remember some moments where he came in and they just lit him up, but he's turned into, arguably one of the best relievers in the game, which is obviously a huge get for San Diego. Yeah. How does he fit in? I don't know. It's a good question. Does he close? We'll see. You look at the prospect haul, and yeah, they certainly got a big haul here, where if we had looked at this trade in the offseason, I think people would have been like losing it. Because
people would have lost their minds for sure.
Snelling was coming off like minor league pitcher of the year. I'm pretty sure like for several outlets, he was minor league pitcher of the year. He was really good across three levels last year, and he just hadn't had it this year. The command's taken a big step backwards, which not good. The fastball is ticked down a little bit and the characteristics just aren't there like they were. And I think that he's going to have to get the fastball working in order for him to have success. You're sitting 91, 93 right now is just not ideal. And you look at the frame and I kind of wonder, is there even room for him to fill out at all? And I don't know if he can add more. We'll see. He's young. He's one of the youngest pitchers in Double A, but yeah, I'd be lying to you if I was not concerned about Robbie Snelling right now. And so I think that is something to watch out for. And at the end of the day, can he improve his stock back up? Absolutely. But right now, like, I'm 1 foot out the door, just given that I've got to see something, because the pitch shapes have not been great. His changeup's been good. He is a good athlete. So I'll give him that credit. I think that, you know, the athleticism can help him bounce back. He's in a super hitter friendly environment, though, and he's allowed a lot of home runs, killed him, but still not missing bats, and the command is not great. But, you know, Major, he was very buzzy coming into the year and even made his major league debut, and probably wouldn't put a lot of stock into his major league performance to date. But I do think that's something you have to talk about, because yeah, I think that the fastball is, you know, questionable. Yeah, it worked against lower level hitters, but can his fastball work, you know, in the upper levels? Can he miss enough bats? And you know, I'm not sure that it can. I do like the slider. I do think the changeup can be decent, but fastball kind of sets everything up. And you know, I think there's still question marks with Major. Graham Pauly, I think Graham Pauly just got screwed with by the fact that they, you know, called him up out of the gate and they sent him to Korea and then sent him right back down immediately. You know, it was 32 plate appearances in the majors. He never really got a shot, and numbers have not been great in AAA. It's a step back from where he was last year too. So I would say that the three headliners of this deal all kind of are a shell of themselves from what they were last year. It's something to watch. You know, J.B. Shears is a lower level guy and a fourth piece here. But at the end of the day, I think the name value's here. I think the potential's here for this deal. But I think that we're going to have to see some improvements from all three of those top guys in this trade.
Yeah, and I think you absolutely have to. And I know Sarah's tweeted that he wasn't really a big fan of Major's fastball either. Fastball hits was averaging 94.6 in his stint with San Diego. I've never been like a big Major guy. He just, I think he's a major league starter. Don't get me wrong, but he's always screamed just like back end starter profile to me. So I've never been overly, you know, into him. Again, I definitely agree. Don't completely just write him off because he was terrible in 8 starts. I think there's a decent arm here, but I've been lower than most on him. But Snelling was one that I went super high on last year. He's sub-2 ERA. He was looking like another frontline starter coming up through San Diego, but command has not, like you mentioned, has taken a big step back this year, and he hasn't really developed that third pitch yet. Fastball, breaker, maybe Miami can, obviously they've done pretty well with changeups. Maybe they can help him get a better feel for that and improve his changeup. We'll see. You know, I don't have him top 100 anymore. I think I have him in like the 130, 140 range right now. Pauly's in that similar range, right? I still think there's a solid player there, maybe like a 20 homer bat. Steals a handful of bags, hits for a decent enough average. Nothing's that's going to stand out, but I still think there's a solid bat to be had there. So I'd look to buy low on Snelling and Pauly for sure. I think while we probably all went, especially me, and I'm guilty of it too, I went too high on both those guys. I think they're better than what they're showing this year. So I'd be fine looking to buy low on those two arms. A couple other moves here before we get out of here. Pittsburgh making a couple of moves here. It's fun to see Kansas City and Pittsburgh being buyers again. That's hasn't happened in, you know, several years. Pittsburgh getting Isaiah Falefa from Toronto for Charles McAdoo, and also getting Brian De La Cruz from Miami for Jun-Suk Shim and Garrett Forrester. I think really the most intriguing name there is Charles McAdoo, who's, you know, quietly been having a really good year this year in Double A, and I don't think he's getting enough kind of love in the prospect world. And I bumped him up pretty high up my rankings recently. 87 games, 315, 394, 538, 21 doubles, 14 home runs, 17 steals, walk rate a little bit over 10%, and a K rate a little over 20%. So pretty solid across the board. And he's even been pretty good in Double A as well, though he was really good in High A, but still faring pretty well in Double A too. What are your thoughts on McAdoo, Chris? He's someone that you're pretty high on.
Yeah, set on an island, I feel like, for a long time with McAdoo. But I know Nate Handy's liked McAdoo since the draft last year, but I had McAdoo as the 11th best prospect traded. I've got him 161 in my prospect rankings. He has been the best hitter in Pittsburgh's organization from a minor league standpoint this year. So 158 WRC plus on the year is the best mark of any Pittsburgh hitter in their farm. It's nuts. And he hits the ball incredibly hard. It's like a 106, 107 ninth percentile. So it's plus power. It's the contact skills have ticked back a little bit in AA, but I saw a really good player when I saw Greensboro several times, and the ability to lift the ball, the ability to hit it hard to all fields, I thought was pretty encouraging, but especially getting that poolside power, I think is huge. Yeah. McAdoo to me is probably the most underrated player that was moved here. Maybe I'm completely off base here by the fact that I have him so high and they gave him up for Isaiah Kalefa, which kind of shocked me considering that Pittsburgh needs, and we talked about yesterday on the Bleacher Report show, we talked about how Pittsburgh needed bats, but their farm system also needs bats, and McAdoo, you can't argue the numbers. He was the best bat in their farm, and they gave him up for Connor Falefa, which I don't love. But you know, at the end of the day, this was a 13th round pick. They got surplus value out of him. They traded him. A little curious on this one. I've got some contacts in the Pirates that, yeah, I'm going to ask because this one had me scratching my head a little bit. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm a big fan of Charles McAdoo, and I thought that the Blue Jays did really good here, to be honest with you. I don't see a lot of Isaiah kind of Falefa's. I can't even say his name right. Isaiah kind of Falefa's profile. But yeah, I like McAdoo a lot.
Don't worry. Nobody out there can say Isaiah Falefa five times fast. It's impossible. But yeah, that was really when I saw this one kind of break, I was like, man, they're giving up a pretty solid rising prospect of McAdoo for just Falefa. Does he move the needle that much? It's great that they're buying and all. Again, I like to see Pittsburgh back in it, but that was a head scratcher. And yeah, McAdoo, he's one of those guys. He's more of a sum of the parts than having any one standout tool, but pretty solid bat across the board. He can hit for a little bit of power. He can steal a few bags here, get on base at a good clip, doesn't strike out too much. So yeah, definitely a pretty underrated guy. This, I think Pittsburgh prospects in general get underrated, especially on the hitting side. And this type of profile in general, the guy that's just solid across the board, often gets undervalued as well because he's not flashy, doesn't have any standout tool. But yeah, I think he's a guy that's definitely on the rise right now, and I don't think the perceived value has caught up and probably will still take a long time to catch up. But one thing real quick I just saw a couple of years ago, McAdoo, this was back in 2021. Now, he played in the Expedition League for a team called the Spearfish Sasquatch. That is a great name.
That is pretty good.
Really. It's in Spearfish, South Dakota. When I saw that, I was like, all right, where is that? I was like thinking Midwest, like up there, and yep, South Dakota. But yeah, the Spearfish Sasquatch Baseball Club. That is phenomenal name. We got to include that next year in the minor league team name bracket. Maybe that one can take down the damn Trash Pandas. Probably not, but a pretty fun name there. All right, a couple more here before we get out. Baltimore, another head-scratching move here. Baltimore acquired like 433 outfielders at the deadline. They got, who's one of those? Austin Slater. They got Christian Pache. They got Eloy Jimenez. I know he's more of a DH, but I was thinking after they traded Austin Hayes that, oh, great, Heston Kjerstad can actually get maybe a little bit of playing time. Great, this is awesome. And then they go out and get all these outfielders, including Eloy, who is obviously the biggest name they acquired in terms of all these outfielders. He's obviously bigger than Slater. But, I don't know, Eloy in Baltimore, you got to be intrigued a little bit. Obviously, Eloy has shown that there's some talent there. Obviously, he can't stay healthy. And maybe he's getting out of the White Sox will help. Getting into, obviously, Baltimore can't hurt. You intrigued here, Chris? And what do you think this means for Kjerstad?
At least a little intrigued here to see where it goes. And you know, I don't think that there's much left in the tank for Eloy, but you know, maybe, just maybe, they figure out something here and it works out, at least in kind of a platoon situation. He could fit in a weak side platoon, and maybe he does fit with a kind of a platoon partner with Heston Kjerstad, where Kjerstad is on the strong side, which is good, but yeah, you know, maybe Eloy fits on the strong side of a platoon and can provide a little bit of value. He doesn't have to play every day, get his reps against left-handed pitching, and maybe it works out. I'm at least a little bit intrigued to see, but I'm not expecting a ton, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I'm good too. I'll probably never be fully out the door on Eloy. I was such a big Eloy guy coming up through the minor leagues. I think I probably had him ranked as a top five prospect several years ago, but man, the guy can just never stay healthy. This is obviously the biggest thing, and I think his skills have eroded as well. But yeah, I'm at least intrigued here. Another guy where it's like, all right, perceived value obviously has dropped a ton. It's super low right now, so it won't take much to acquire him. So what the heck? If it doesn't work out, you probably didn't give up much to get him. And if it does, at least to some degree, all right, then it works out for you. But yeah, pretty weird. And this, I want to see Kiersey get more playing time. You know, it's probably not going to happen this year at this point, but I'm still going on Kiersey. But let's see him get more playing time first. All right, last deal here before we get out of here: Jack Flaherty going to the Los Angeles Dodgers in exchange for Theron Lorenzo and Trace Sweeney, which was, I don't know, given what we saw for Yusei Kikuchi, it was weird that the Dodgers got Flaherty for Lorenzo, and Sweeney are decent and all, but I feel like Toronto got just as good of a return for Kikuchi, so that was weird. But let's start with Flaherty here before we get to the prospects. Now, he was a guy that obviously had those two really good years back in 2018 and 2019, and had a decent year in 2021, though it was abbreviated, but been more down than up over the last few years, including last year, 4.99 ERA and a 1.58 whip. But you know, getting into Detroit this year, 28 years old, he's back to being just as good or maybe even better than he was. Actually, this probably is the best version of Flaherty we've ever seen, because he's got right around the same ERA as he did back then. He's got the best strikeout rate of his career this year at 32% and the best walk rate of his career at 4.6%, which is much better. His previous career best was 7.1%. back in 2019, and the last 2 years was over 10%. So yeah, this is the best version of Flaherty we've seen in maybe ever. But he's also had the back issues, which are concerning. Are you buying Flaherty right now, or are you selling given the back issues?
I think that is one reason why they didn't get a huge haul. And there were reports that apparently Houston had offered that same package for Flaherty and they held out. And this is what they end up getting. So I do like it for Flaherty. He's returning to his hometown team, the team that he grew up loving. And you have to think that's a motivation in a way. You also have to question the back injury. He missed one start, but I think it's fair to at least say, okay, like I don't know. All he needs is 2 months though. So you hope that he gives you those 2 months. And for a dynasty perspective, he's 28 years old. So I think that there is still some intrigue from a dynasty perspective too, that he's as young as he is and has pitched as well as he is this year and really bounced back. And from the Tigers perspective, they gave him a 1 year, $14 million prove it deal, and he proved it and they capitalized on it. Maybe it's not the flashiest deal. I tend to be the high person on Sweeney for a long time. I just really love the athlete and the profile. It's a bigger frame shortstop where I think he can play shortstop long term. Does he? I don't know. They can move him off. He could probably play third base today for them. But the bat, yeah, he's an analytic darling that just hasn't really performed due to the amount of ground balls he hits, and it just, you know, the lack of pulled fly balls has hurt him too. But Lorenzo's the upside shot. You look, and I think Lorenzo can end up be someone that we look back and say, all right, it worked out really good. He's probably not a catcher long term, but the power upside's there. I think the contact numbers have improved this year, so that's encouraging. Still below average contact profile, but yeah, you know, no matter where he plays, I think the bat has a lot of potential. But people look at the surface numbers and say, oh man, like the Tigers really got rocked here. But I do like Lorenzo. I think that he's a headliner and has as much upside as probably about anybody that was traded. And Sweeney, I think, is high floor. Maybe he's not an everyday regular, but I think that Sweeney fits the profile of a player that, yeah, he's going to get his service time in the major leagues and be a solid player. So I think they did fine, but I think that had Flaherty been fully healthy, there's no telling what they would have gotten, because given that Kikuchi went for what he did, I think that, you know, Flaherty probably could have got a little more, but I do think the reports are true that teams were concerned about the fact that he had missed and start with a back injury.
Fits the Dodgers mold for pitchers lately. Really talented with some durability concerns. Look at their rotation now. Like, I don't know what's better, like their IL rotation or their actual rotation right now. With Kershaw back and adding Flaherty, obviously you probably go with the active one. but like their active rotation is Glasnow, Kershaw, Flaherty, Stone, and River Ryan. And their IL rotation is Yamamoto, Buehler, Gonsolin, Dustin May, and Emmett Sheehan. So that's, and that'd probably be a top 10 rotation in baseball, just like their IL rotation right now. But yeah, Flaherty, I think this is a good value or a good spot for him. If he can stay healthy, I think he's, I'm buying back in. There's a lot of good in the profile. As mentioned, this is the best version of him we've seen. And I was a pretty big Flaherty naysayer in the last several years, but he just turned it around. Absolutely. There's no denying that. Sweeney's, yeah, pretty undervalued. He was first rounder a few years ago out of Eastern Illinois University. He's a little bit older now in terms of for the prospect world, or at least but the perceived old age for prospects at 24. But he's been pretty solid. 16 homers, 31 steals in 2022, and then went 13-20 last year in just 100 games. This year, 13-16 in 96 games. So he's been consistently pretty solid. The averages have not been super high right now, and you got to wonder where does the average settle long-term, but I think there's potential for above-average power here. It'd be like a 20, low 20s home run bat. I think there's enough speed. It's not a burner by any means, but enough speed to maybe get you 8 to 10 per year. And wondered where did he fit in with the Dodgers, but now maybe he's got to play shortstop for Detroit sooner rather than later. So, yeah, I like that move a lot for him. And then Lorenzo, obviously he had a pretty big year last year, 400 OBP, 24 home runs in 94 games, though he was in a very hitter-friendly environment. This year, still walking a lot, but only 7 home runs in 74 games. You know, I still believe in the power. I don't think it was 100% inflated because of the environment last year, but definitely didn't hurt him either. But so I think he still potentially could be a major league bat here, and I'd look to buy low here. So again, good OBP skills, good power. We'll see if he can turn it around here moving forward. But that is going to wrap us up. Part two in the books. Another fun trade deadline. Broke it all down over the last two episodes. Again, if you missed the first half with all the moves from like last week leading up to this past Sunday night, go check that out. And we'll be back with you again next Monday. But until then, everyone take care.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.